Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio show and podcast. And I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and it's good to be here. We are now in a another special edition series on the Throttle Up Radio show and podcast. We just started this series, I think it was it a couple of weeks ago, is that right? I'm talking to my audio engineer here. She keeps me on track and make sure I don't make any serious mistakes. She does a great job. All right, so this is episode 3. This episode is called, the series is called Think Like a Fighter Pilot. Let me say that once again, because this is really important today as we try to work our way through this information warfare battle. Okay, think like a fighter pilot. This is what we are going to be discussing for some time now. Why are we doing this? Well, there's a short answer and a long answer. Let me try to explain it in long form. The reason why we are doing this is that if we are going to embrace the ideas around, or we can, a better way of saying that is that if we're going to embrace the ideas surrounding critical thinking, and if we are going to embrace the ideas surrounding the truth algorithm, and if we are going to work to apply the truth algorithm whenever it is necessary to use, then we have to understand something fundamental, which is we have to have the right mental orientation. Now, my position here is, and what I'm trying to emphasize, and I'm trying to emphasize this very strongly, in many ways, in many cases, we have been encouraged or outright taught to think incorrectly. I know that's rather strong and a little bit in your face and so forth and so on, but that's the truth, and that's just, we have to recognize that, is that we have not been taught to think critically. All right, you can say, well, that's an unfortunate oversight, and isn't that too bad? Maybe we are living in a world in which there are groups of people that don't want us to think critically and do not want us to employ higher order reasoning. Now, so what does think like a fighter pilot have to do with anything? It has to do with almost everything. A fighter pilot does not employ conventional thinking. Okay, so you can say, well, why haven't I read about this stuff? Why haven't I known about this before? One of the things that we have been faced with for a very long time is that this notion of mysticism and the fact that it's very, very difficult to get into the cockpit of a fighter airplane and observe how fighter pilots perform, how they go about performing their activities, how they engage in aerial combat, and how they win. It's very, very difficult to understand from an observational standpoint. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to tell you and explain to the best of my ability how fighter pilots think, because because I have been there. Okay, I am a retired fighter pilot. And I will say that very proudly. The fighter pilot community is very, very small. Am I suggesting that fighter pilots are somehow better than or somehow more worthy of praise than others? I'm not suggesting that one single bit. Okay. We have a very, very strange and distorted view of pilots, military pilots, and fighter pilots. Let me say this right up front. All military pilots have had to go through very, very rigorous training. It doesn't matter what service. To be a designated military pilot from any service, Army, Air Force, Marines, and Navy, every one of us has had to go through extremely intense, rigorous, and often dangerous training that verified the fact that we could actually perform under pressure, that we could perform our activities under extreme pressure. And every single military pilot out there has had to demonstrate that, and we honor that and respect every single one. And there are lots of things that we need to understand about the roles and responsibilities. So, what's important to keep in mind is fighter pilots are within the group of military pilots, and in order for a fighter pilot to effectively function, he has to have an enormous amount of support. There are lots of people that make it possible for a fighter pilot to perform his activities, engage in combat, and succeed and achieve mission success. Okay, so let's get that out of the way. Fighter pilots are not better. Fighter pilots do certain things that are necessary for the overall success of the battle plan of the air campaign, however you want to state that. But when I say think like a fighter pilot, the fighter pilots are a particular sub-community of the pilot community, and I'm not suggesting that this way of thinking is exclusive to the fighter pilot community, because it is not. However, in order for you to be a successful fighter pilot, you have to be able to think in certain ways. And this thinking process is not usual. This thinking process is not actually taught, because in many cases, the ability to teach things that I will be discussing has not yet been developed in any substantial way, and that's unfortunate. We often talk about the aerial combat maneuvers associated with the fighter pilot mission. We often talk about Top Gun, but we really don't talk about What is the way in which fighter pilots think? How do they think? Okay, not what they think or what they do, but actually how do they think? The key to success, and this is across the board, the key to success is to understand how you think. Okay? Understand how others think, and from that perspective, from that understanding, we can understand almost everything that is going on in the human condition. What matters most is understand how you arrived at your belief, how you arrived at your conclusion, how you arrived at the optimum decision, not what it was or what it is, but how did you get there? What was the thinking process, which translates into how do I think? How do others think? How does a fighter pilot think? When I say think like a fighter pilot, I'm actually talking about knowing how such a thinking process is performed, knowing how a fighter pilot thinks. Why is this important? It's important because in this whole arena that we're talking about, critical thinking, the truth algorithm, and think like a fighter pilot, this whole arena is determined the success. If we are going to be successful, the first order of business and the thing that's going to be determine whether or not we are thinking in a proper way is to audit our mind space and to look at very, very carefully, look at how we think, and to understand that the best way forward in this very high stress, high threat environment that we are all facing, the best way forward is to embrace the ideas that underlie the think like a fighter pilot paradigm. Okay, understand how a fighter pilot thinks and adopt those thinking principles, adopt that thinking process such that we can actually succeed in this high threat environment when we are being given information that is not true, that if we believe in such a thing, it will do us harm. Okay, that's, you know, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to address myself to. That's one of the things that I'm trying to emphasize here, okay? We are living in a world in which others wish us harm for their own personal gain. They wish to gain something at others' expense. They wish to succeed at the expense of others. This is a very dangerous world. I don't exactly know how we got here, but we have. I think probably we have arrived in this time and place because of the passivity of most people. Most people don't want to get engaged. Most people would rather have somebody else do it. Most people are living in this world of blissful ignorance. If that's a little bit harsh, then so be it. That is the way it is. We have to acknowledge that. We have to recognize that up to this point, we may very well have been part of the problem. I know that I can say that of myself. Before I started Throttle Up Radio, I was actually part of the problem. No question about it. I was just, you know, content to let others do it and to sit back and watch the world go by, and that was not going to work. And so I started this Throttle Up Radio show and podcast, and I decided that I was going to take action and I was going to do my part. And that's the attitude I'm trying to put forward here for all of the listeners, all right? Take action, do your part. The first order of business, I've said this so many times. I know it sounds like it's getting old. Nevertheless, it's so important that I keep saying it over and over again. If you know how to think critically, teach it to others. If you don't know how to think critically, then learn. You can learn a lot by listening to this show and this podcast. You can review material because we have it in podcast form. It's easy to find. You can go to our website, throttleupradio.com. You can find the radio show on iTunes and other platforms as well. How does a fighter pilot think? Okay. A fighter pilot thinks in ways that enable the fighter pilot to perform activities that are extremely difficult. They are very dangerous, and they are all high-stakes operations. In other words, there's a lot on the line here. Okay, there's a lot on the line. A fighter pilot performs things that are that impact the nation at the national level. Okay, the training involved is intense, and it is long and very, very expensive, by the way. And so the fighter pilot community is, in fact, a national resource, as all other military pilot communities are national resources as well. Okay. The thing that we have to understand is this, and I'm going to my notes here, and I'm looking at the ideas surrounding this the key points that I am trying to bring out in this series that we call Think Like a Fighter Pilot. The first thing to and I mentioned this last week as well, all right, but the first thing to keep in mind is that if we are using terms like critical thinking and the truth algorithm, it does require us to have a certain mental orientation. It requires us to make sure that whatever is occupying our mind space is such that it will enable these other things to become effectively implemented and activated as we pursue key activities like problem solving, okay, decision making. How do we do that in a high threat, time compressed environment? Okay, we have the answers. I can tell you how it's done, but it is not something that you're going to be able to get typically out of academia because they don't have it. Okay, there's lots of reasons why they don't have it. I think that is changing. Certainly, that is changing. I think that if you go to, for example, the book, The Checklist Manifesto by Dr. Gawande, I mentioned him before, if you go there, you begin to see something emerge that is very, very unusual. He's kind of one of the thought leaders here in this initiative. It's very, very unusual what he has been putting forth. It is not typical. It is way, way outside the box. And I give him a lot of credit. It took a lot of intellectual courage to do what he has done for the medical community. Okay. Before we even try to consider how a fighter pilot thinks, we need to understand, first and foremost, certain things about human consciousness. Why do we need to do that? Well, because if we don't get this right, if we don't understand human consciousness correctly, right, we're not going to be able to then embrace the ideas of critical thinking, complex problem solving, the truth algorithm, and we're not going to understand at all how fighter pilots think. If we don't understand how fighter pilots think, that we are not going to be able to solve these complex problems that exist in a high threat environment. We are not going to be able to do it. I'll tell you that right now. It's not going to happen. We're going to be frustrated. We are going to lose. We're going to blame it on others, of course. We're going to blame it on unusual circumstances. Okay, so we're going to play the blame game. The fact is that we're not going to win. Okay, the opposition is counting on that. The opposition is counting on the fact that they are going to fool us. We're not going to be able to understand what's going on, and we're not going to be able to understand what to do about it. Okay? That's what is going on. The opposition is the enemy. Okay? We can define the enemy all kinds of ways. The fact remains, and you can put a name on it if you want to, the fact remains that they are the enemy. They are our enemy. We are engaged in information warfare. If you don't know that by now, then I guess I could say, well, you haven't been paying attention, okay? We are engaged in an information warfare battle. We have to equip ourselves properly. First and foremost, we have to clean out the debris and the rubbish from our mind space. We have to get rid of those things that are not useful to us in this time and place. We have to do that. What is it? We have to understand what human consciousness is. We have to look at our ability to think. We have to look at our own consciousness. What is consciousness? Consciousness pertains to awareness. Awareness pertains to perception. Awareness and perception enables the acquisition of knowledge. Okay. If the knowledge is accurate and true. Now, there's the key. Okay. Are we understanding things that are accurate and true? Or are there forces afoot, nefarious forces, that want us to believe things that are not accurate and not true? If they are successful, if the opposition is successful, if the enemy is successful in getting us to believe things that are not accurate and not true, they win. Okay. Period. If they are unsuccessful in their attempts to get us to believe things that are not accurate and not true, they lose. It's as simple as that. Do we want to win the information warfare battle, or do we want to lose? If we want to win the information warfare battle, then we better get to work. Now, we better get to work. If the knowledge that we have is accurate and true, that leads to comprehension. Notice that we went from consciousness all the way to comprehension. Okay? Comprehension, when combined with experience, leads to wisdom. Okay? We have a golden opportunity here. Okay? We are experiencing, we are in the middle of, and therefore we are all experiencing information warfare. Okay. If our comprehension is accurate and true, this and if it is combined with experience, that leads to wisdom. At the end of this war, if we are successful, we all will become wiser. We will become wise beings. That is the key. That is the way that I want all of us to understand and appreciate and embrace that idea. Okay? We must be successful, and when we are successful, because we have experienced firsthand this information warfare battle, we will all become much wiser. We will be wise beings. This is a test of our human consciousness. What is my belief? My belief is, and again, you know, keep in mind that my position has always been on the side of optimism. I am very optimistic, okay? I am not pessimistic. I am optimistic. I believe that we can rise to the occasion. I see it already around me. I see it, okay? I'm very optimistic, by the way, okay? We are going through some very, very tough times. But without that experience, we will never achieve wisdom. We might have the knowledge, and we might have some high level of comprehension of the human condition, but without actually experiencing what we are experiencing, we will not achieve wisdom. Okay. That, by the way, is that which is missing in most of our educational and training programs. We miss that very point. Now, in terms of the pilot community, no, they have not missed that. They recognize that the evaluation of a pilot's performance is based in great part on the ability of the pilot, when confronted with a problem, can actually solve the problem under stress, or a better way to say that is under stressful conditions and under increased time compression. Okay, so the pilot community is kind of got that, right? Kind of into that way of thinking, which is actual experience. What is the actual experience? So at some point in time, we have to recognize that we are growing wiser. Our wisdom is increasing because we have done so. Okay, if, in fact, comprehension, which is the thorough comprehension combined with experience, leads to wisdom, what is it that we need to know in terms of what does it mean to think like a fighter pilot? And let me give you a quick definition, or a very, very quick tutorial on this, and trust me, this will be followed up with more and better information. But the quick tutorial is this: a fighter pilot thinks both horizontally and vertically. Now, you can think vertically, actually, or metaphorically. Okay, what does it mean by actual? Actual means that you are thinking in terms of your altitude above an object on the ground. Okay, that is altitude. You're thinking vertically. You're also thinking horizontally with respect to some location on planet Earth. Metaphorically, vertically means that you are going up the abstraction hierarchy. You are considering things that exist above the literal. Okay, if you are, then you are employing vertical thinking. Okay, you have to think both horizontally and vertically if you want to think like a fighter pilot. If you're not actually flying an airplane, you're thinking vertically, metaphorically. That means you are thinking in a higher order reasoning fashion. You are thinking about things in the abstract, not the literal. The abstract reasoning is crucial here. We have to be able to do it, and we have to be actually become good at it. And we also have to consider how things interact with one another. Okay, the notion that everything is a random collection of formless data is actually incorrect. Okay, everything out there in the known universe, everything out there in our consciousness that occupies our consciousness, everything out there is moving, and it is interacting with everything else. Okay. Such interactions represent a reality in which everything and everyone are interconnected. Observational considerations that support situation awareness are: reality is dynamic, so many things are variable and interactive with one another. A quick way of saying that, by the way, is interactive variables or interacting variables. Okay, so an object or a thing is a variable, and often they are. Very few things are not a variable. Very few things are constant in the real world. Okay, so whatever is we're looking at is something that is variable in various ways or through various ideas of the parameters that can describe it, and it interacts with other things. In the world of a fighter pilot, everything is related, okay, including the sun angle. Not making this up. including the sun angle, including the cloud cover, including the day or night, dawn or dusk, including the cloud buildups, including convective activity, including the wind. I could go on and on. I think you get the idea here. Everything is interactive. Okay, you detect a unknown airborne object on the horizon. There are ways and technical mechanisms and also conceptual mechanisms that help you determine if this object, if this target is friendly or if it is a threat, if it is a foe. We call it friend or foe. Okay, IFF is what the terms we use in the fighter pilot community. Okay, and then we look at other things that might be related. If the foe, if the enemy airplane emerged from a cloud bank, it is very possible that there are other enemy airplanes airborne as well. We don't know, but we're going to assume that they are. And so what is the altitude and what is the speed of the enemy target? How many are there? What is the position of its sanctuary, if in fact it has a sanctuary? Can we defeat the enemy while it's in its sanctuary at its airfield rather than airborne? There's hundreds of things that could be and may very well be considered as we prepare for battle. There is all kinds of things. Okay. The position with respect to the enemy formation, the position, the angular offset is extremely important. I could go on and on and on, and probably will put together a video to explain a lot of this stuff in a visual way. But one thing to remember is that a fighter pilot does not think in discrete data point sets. It does not. A fighter pilot does not employ discrete data point thinking. An individual data point exists in and of itself. A fighter pilot does not believe that at all. Okay? That is something that is not, it is completely rejected because it will lead to failure. Everything is connected out there. So if you get a piece of information, now I've talked about this before, and I want to ask my audio engineer, how much time do I have? I have a few more minutes. All right, so I do want to play that. This is related to what I'm talking about in terms of our mind space, so I got a little bit distracted here, but let me go ahead and play this audio clip. It's from the Academy of Ideas, and it's called The Psychology of Self-Transformation, and this relates to cleaning up our mind space to make it acceptable and to make it, to optimize it so that we actually can think like a fighter pilot. All right, so let's go ahead and listen to this from the Academy of Ideas. Again, another great piece from these wonderful people who put this program together.
The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. Henry David Thoreau made this remark over 150 years ago. However, it is an observation that still rings true today. Often this desperation is the product of nagging feelings that we are wasting our life, accompanied by the frustration that despite our desire to make something of ourselves, the years pass by and nothing seems to change. Phillips Brooks commented that those in this predicament feel the thing they ought to be beating beneath the thing they are. If we ignore these feelings for too long, then we will remain forever haunted by what might have been. In this video, we will explore how we can escape from a life of quiet desperation and transform ourselves in a manner more conducive to a fulfilling existence. We cannot change anything unless we accept it, wrote Carl Jung. The first step, therefore, is to acknowledge that a change in our way of life is needed. An easy way to determine how necessary it is for us to change is to take note of how often we are afflicted by feelings of regret, guilt, anxiety, or depression. Jung believed that in the overwhelming majority of cases, neurotic symptoms such as these are a direct result of an inadequate approach to life and act as signals communicating the necessity of change. It seemed to Jung, wrote Yolanda Jacoby in her book The Way of Individuation, that the meaning of neurotic sufferings might consist in their compelling a man to come to terms with the foundation of his being and with the world, and thereby to gain a better knowledge of his limits and possibilities. Jung thus puts the emphasis on the prospective aspect, giving neurosis a positive meaning, and not regarding it only as a burdensome illness. According to him, it can even act as a stimulus in the struggle for the development of the personality and be, paradoxically, a curative factor. When troubled by these negative emotional states, however, most people choose to take the easy road. Instead of changing their behaviors, they try to dull their feelings or flee from them if possible. They take drugs, drink, or distract themselves by pursuing mindless pleasures. In the long run, this only exacerbates the problem, and Jung offered a warning for those who choose this path. We may think there is a safe road, wrote Jung, but that would be the road of death. Then nothing happens any longer, at any rate, not the right things. Anyone who takes the safe road is as good as dead. After accepting that change is needed, the question becomes, what type of change is most conducive to a fulfilling life? In the mid-20th century, the psychologist Abraham Maslow set out to answer this question. Unlike many of his colleagues who devoted most of their time to studying the mentally ill, Maslow decided to do the opposite. He chose to study those who excelled in life, and this led him to an important discovery. The healthiest and most flourishing among us are those who are motivated by trends to self-actualization, which Maslow defined as an ongoing actualization of potentials, capacities, and talents as fulfillment of a mission, as a fuller knowledge of and acceptance of the person's own intrinsic nature, and as an unceasing trend toward unity. Maslow was so convinced of the importance of self-actualization that he made the following bold pronouncement. If you plan on being anything less than you are capable of being, you will probably be unhappy all the days of your life. But after years of stagnating, years in which our bad habits and destructive behavioral patterns have solidified, how can we become self-actualizers? A quote of uncertain origins, but often attributed to Ralph Waldo Emerson, provides some direction. Sow a thought and you reap an action. Sow an act and you reap a habit. Sow a habit and you reap a character. Sow a character and you reap a destiny. The first step is the thought, and for those of us striving to live more fulfilling lives, this entails the selection of an aim or purpose to our existence. For as Maslow pointed out, self-actualizers are very much defined by a life mission. In making this selection, people sometimes get tripped up into believing that this requires the determination of their true passion. The problem with this approach is that it overlooks the fact that very often our passions follow the development of our skills. Therefore, if you are uncertain of where your passions lie, it is unlikely you will discover them through thought alone. Rather than delaying for too long, it is far better to pick something challenging which sparks your curiosity, and not worry about whether it is the perfect choice. With that said, the sowing of the thought or the selection of a goal will only be of positive consequence if we reap the actions and build the better habits which ultimately move us forward in the pursuit of our aims. Having something to aim at is important, not so much because of the external rewards achievement of the goal will bring, but rather because of the transformation it forces us to undergo. Pursuing a challenging goal requires us to leave our comfort zone as we develop new skills, cultivate self-discipline, and in the process, discover that we are not as helpless as we once thought. The problem for many of us, however, is that we struggle in moving from the sowing of the thought to the reaping of the actions. Often people blame their inability to take productive action on their anxiety, depression, fear, or a lack of confidence in their abilities. Before taking the actions necessary to pursue their aims, such people reason, perhaps they must first rid themselves of their negative emotions. This, however, is an approach often doomed to fail. These negative emotional states are by and large the result of faulty behavioral patterns and the avoidance of facing up to our fears and courageously taking on the challenges in our lives that would lead to personal growth. Meditation and introspection alone will never cure us of these feelings. Rather, we must learn that we can take purposeful action even when we are feeling anxious, depressed, or fearful. The importance of purposeful action as a cure for our troubled emotions is foundational to Morita therapy, a Japanese school of psychotherapeutic thought. As David Reynolds, a practitioner of the school, explains, "Realign your life toward getting done what reality sends that needs doing. In other words, we advise you to focus more on purposeful behavior. Let the feelings take care of themselves. What I think you will find is that when you get good at doing what needs doing in your life, the feelings stop giving you such trouble. And even if your feelings become troublesome, when you are involved in constructive activity, they remain in perspective. Feelings cease to be the whole show." The ability to act even when we are not feeling up to it is one of the most distinguishing characteristics of self-actualizers. For as Thomas Huxley wrote, "Perhaps the most valuable result of all education is the ability to make yourself do the thing you have to do when it ought to be done, whether you like it or not." Furthermore, as Maslow wrote in Toward a Psychology of Being, self-actualizing does not mean a transcendence of all human problems. Conflict, anxiety, frustration, sadness, hurt, and guilt can all be found in healthy human beings. Therefore, it doesn't matter who you are or what stage of life you are at, negative emotions will always present themselves. The question is, do you have the courage to act in the face of these feelings or not? Those who find such courage will live far better lives than those who cower in the face of their fears. For as Emerson wrote, "Do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain." An effective way to gain the necessary courage to act in the face of your fears is to reflect on the imminence of death. The Stoic philosophers suggested that those who become more aware of just how brief life is will be far more likely to live in the most intense and courageous manner possible, striving to take advantage of each moment. Steve Jobs, who was clearly a man of action, recognized the power of this method. "Remembering that I'll be dead soon," he stated, "is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart." But awareness of our approaching death is a double-edged sword. If we delay too long in instituting the changes required to live a more fulfilling life, and instead of striving to actualize our potential, we fritter away our time, then awareness of our mortality will give rise to nagging and increasingly intense feelings of guilt and regret. We will have chosen the safe road, which Jung called the road of death, and we will spend our remaining days fleeing from the fact that we are wasting our life. In her book, The Way of Individuation, Yolande Jacoby provides a warning of what can be expected for those who choose this path. "Any obstruction of the natural processes of development, or getting stuck on a level unsuited to one's age, takes its revenge, if not immediately, then later at the onset of the second half of life, in the form of serious crises, nervous breakdowns, and all manner of physical and psychic sufferings. Mostly they are accompanied by vague feelings of guilt, by tormenting pangs of conscience, often not understood, in face of which the individual is helpless. He knows he is not guilty of any bad deed, he has not given way to an illicit impulse, and yet he is plagued by uncertainty, discontent, despair, and above all, anxiety, a constant, indefinable anxiety. And in truth, he must usually be pronounced guilty. His guilt does not lie in the fact that he has a neurosis, but in the fact that, knowing he has one, he does nothing to set about curing it.
Okay, so another great piece from the Academy of Ideas. A couple of takeaways here, and this is especially important and pertinent to what we're talking about in this show. A purposeful activity. We are suggesting here and encouraging all of us to take to engage in purposeful activities and don't just be passively in a part of the world, be an active component, a dynamic aspect of the reality of this existence that we find ourselves in. So take action. I've talked about a number of things that we can do right away. The first order of business is that we can take charge of our thinking. Make that a commitment to yourself. I am going to take charge of the things that I think about, the things that I believe. I'm going to make sure I understand how I think and how I should think if I want to live a life of fulfillment and purpose and a life that is good and moral and ethical. I'm going to do that. Take charge of what occupies your mind space. Do not allow people, things, entities to put things in your mind space without challenge. Do not allow, in fact, don't do it. All right, just say, no, I'm not going to buy into that on face value. I'm not going to believe that just because you said it. I'm going to control what occupies my mind space. I have taken full control of that. I've taken control of my thinking, and therefore I have taken control of my mind space. And furthermore, I'm going to embrace the ideas surrounding this phrase that is, think like a fighter pilot. I'm going to do that. I am going to think like a fighter pilot because that's my road to success. Okay, it looks like we are at the end of another Throttle Up Radio Show and podcast. Thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week.